listening to BU in the Morning on WTBU, the beat of Boston University. Listen in at WTBUradio.org or on the WTBU Radio app. Call us at 617-353-6400 or send us a message on Spinatron. Also, make sure you're following us at BU in the Morning, WTBU, on social media.
All right, and the songs you just listened to were Lucky For You by Novo Amor, Life's a Gas by T-Rex, Sliding Doors by Flight, Malibu by Hole, Charlie Don't Surf by The Clash, and The Weakest Shade of Blue by Pernice Brothers.
Right. And then, what was that you just listened to? we have this is the Philadelphia Orchestra playing Copland's Fanfare for the Common Man.
Yeah.
And today we are joined by a very special guest, Holly Makovic.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for being here with us. Very excited to have you.
Yeah.
Holly is the senior collections
Correct.
Music librarian here mm-hmm. at Mugar, and we're very excited to be able to talk with her today.
Okay, I'm so pleased to be here. And you might be wondering why we opened with Fanfare for the Common Man. I don't know, was that piece at all familiar to any of you, any moments? So you know it. Mm-hmm. It's from 1942, mm-hmm. and it was one of 18 independent commissions of ceremonial patriotic music in the time of World War II for brass and percussion. And the percussion in the Copland is meant to be bombs mm-hmm. in the distance, but the trumpet is the spirit of the nation carrying on. So what does this have to do with inauguration weekend? Well, on Saturday night, the day after inauguration, or maybe capping off the inauguration of President Gilliam, mm-hmm. is a work by Joan Tower. It's going to be piece number one in a concert at Symphony Hall called Fanfare for the Uncommon Woman. Same instrumentation, percussion, mm-hmm. and the beautiful brass. Although you can tell simply by looking at the music, it's going to be a little bit more active than the Fanfare for the Common Man and much more upbeat and optimistic. So the composer Tower is simply tapping into the collective memory, mm-hmm. I think, of Fanfare for the Common Man, but just upping it to mm-hmm. a new level, a mm-hmm. new celebratory level.
Right.
And I do want to mention that the Saturday concert at the Sai is not ticketed. It is free. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to be there in person, come very early mm-hmm. to get a seat. And the musicians of our symphony are just incredible. Mm-hmm. Our brass, I know, are going to be marvelous. Mm-hmm. And that concert will also be live streamed, like mm-hmm. the inaugural right. Morning service on Friday and mm-hmm. the afternoon service.
Oh. And do you know where we could watch that stream?
Oh, the Sai Center stream? I just typed a handout. I Googled it actually to find what I think is the page mm-hmm. on the CFA website, you know, like
okay,
Boston
yeah.
University the Symphony Saturday on, mm-hmm. on this date, and whether or not it's going to be the same link on the inaugural stream. I didn't see it listed on the formal inaugural page mm-hmm. for Friday's events, which is simply bu.edu/inauguration-2024, and that's okay. where you would go to get all your information for that.
Mm-hmm.
I will be there in person.
Nice.
And
on,
I can't,
on Saturday?
Yeah. Well, on Friday, tomorrow. Yeah, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. Saturday. Saturday, I hope. But Friday, as I understand it, is going to be most everybody up and down campus, dancers, jazz
ensemble.
It's going to be amazing. Mm-hmm. Pretty much everybody except the symphony, mm-hmm. you know, which,
yeah.
and the symphony is, of course, doing a full program. I think featuring sort of, you know, a controlled giddiness and optimism and mm-hmm. love of situation. Mm-hmm. And there will be some nostalgia in there, but something as bouncy as The American in Paris is going to close it.
Oh, wow.
Which has these embedded references to jazz right. throughout.
Oh, that's so exciting.
Anyway, I think it's going to be just a beautiful community kind mm-hmm. of event.
Right.
And I hope some alums make it into the library and swing by and say hi. We'll see. Mm-hmm. We'll see. Yeah.
And I know you mentioned that you're a BU alum yourself.
That's true. Mm-hmm. That's true.
Does this bring up extra nostalgia or resonates in a different way for you?
I don't know. Because when I was a student here, I was working elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So then coming over and I was more familiar with a different library than BU's own library.
Right. Yeah.
So I had to learn a lot of things from square one mm-hmm. When I came here. I don't get to that many BU events, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
I've gone to the student composers for their opera scenes and some performers. The BU on Broadway productions. Mm-hmm. Does anyone go? Oh, my goodness.
I've been to a couple.
Oh, my goodness. And I was just, you mm-hmm. know, blown away. I mean, I've never, ever been disappointed what I've managed to stumble into.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Were you a student at BU for an undergrad?
No. I did my undergrad at SUNY Fredonia.
Mm-hmm.
I did my master's at Southern Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
Carbondale, and I did my doctoral degree here primarily in piano mm-hmm. performance. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
That's really interesting. So, was it through CFA?
Yes, mm-hmm. yes, it was.
Nice.
But I was able to split performance opportunities between CFA ensembles, and we had a whole lot of requirements. I mean, mm-hmm. you've got to do this and that, and a lecture recital, and qualifying, the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
But because I was working at the time at the Harvard Music Library, which was big, heavy composition area over mm-hmm. there, it's like, oh, hey, we need a pianist. Are you in? I said yes, and so some fancy formal things and some very informal things mm-hmm. over there, but. In those days, it was contemporary music for me, but not jazz. I you know, somehow things were a bit compartmentalized.
Mm-hmm. That you were playing?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So today your role is a senior music collections librarian.
Yes, yes.
Which is a really cool title.
Well, I know.
Maybe you can go into a brief description about what exactly you do and what kind of materials are available for the students who might be tuning in.
Oh, sure. Oh, sure. So in a nutshell, okay, so we are not relying so much on microfilms anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But when the Mukar building was established, I mean, a huge portion of that collection was microfilm based. Mm-hmm. That was it. When Mugar was established, the area where I work was known as audio. So we had poetry, plays, speeches, and primarily on vinyl, mm-hmm. some open reel recordings, as well as music across all genres.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, we have original Rolling Stones on vinyl. We have Nina Simone's very first album that she did, and who knew? I mean, we found it. A lot of classical music, and in some cases, multiple performances of the same work on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So especially the early music, how was it done? How were people thinking about this? So as you see here, I brought the Copland over,
mm-hmm.
The two different fanfares, but accompanying that at the time were extensive brochures and liner notes and scripts and so forth. Those eventually moved elsewhere in the building, but the musical notation stayed on the second floor
mm-hmm.
in our area. And you might say, well, where did all this come from? And as you can see, some of it is pretty old looking. we, or they, people before me, let me put it that way, a lot of the published scores came in a miniature format. It was less expensive and extremely portable. And guess what? It was just like having a palm device where you could turn the pages and have your own study score. But these are more standardized formats. So there was a combination of subscriptions. For example, annually a project would be happening over in Berlin, you know, we're going to, and Leipzig actually, let's producing the scholarly edition, the complete works of Bach. Okay, we want to be in on that. So every year, a couple new volumes would come in. And it would be a big deal to open the box, and people would be hanging around. Oh, what's released? What's released? Because we didn't have the internet to know honestly what was coming when. So it was all constant surprises that way. And a new arrival of a score, whether we ordered it on purpose or it just arrived by surprise, was often a trigger for, oh, let's have a class on this. So or let's make a project out of this. So
that's amazing.
When things built kind of slowly over time, that was staying actually on top of the research in some ways. You know, either you were working with composers in the area, or you were looking at the new publications and figuring out, wow, what got consulted so that it could be compiled and published as this score? Why would anybody do this? You know, and you know, what are their citations like? You know, and the critical report is the partner to that score. And of course, books came in. I would say maybe 20, 25 years ago, we had over 100 journal and magazine subscriptions. And I just want to say that we still keep a few physical subscriptions happening. Now the Rolling Stone is actually a very big deal, and I think having it in your hands means a lot. And these are in the music library, the Rolling Stone, the Billboard, some early music items, some theory, a couple things from Asia, something called Soundlines, which is marvelous. It has a marvelous website, but again, to get that profile of emerging artists and festivals internationally is just one of these things kind of lying around on the shelf. So on your way to the listening room, glance to the right and have a look at, you know, the latest year of these things. It's really quite quite fun.
Is Soundline something similar to Rolling Stone, or is it?
Oh no, it's a different thing. We would call it a global. I would say in its reach. That's another thing about our book collection, in particular the theory and the pedagogy, is all on one wall. And if you stand back a little bit and squint, and you look at the information on the spines, you will see something of the world. And walk on a few more steps. It's like, oh, well, something of international scope. Walk on a few more steps. And the publications now are bringing in that word global. So I think, now I've never tested that out in some kind of digital way, but I thought, gosh, you know, it's right in front of us. That kind of context.
Right, that's super important to have such a large-scale collection and kind of reach to.
It is, and I think about how would we, how does that sense of where we are or where anybody else would join in, right? How would we know if we were not standing right there? And that's something I think about a lot, actually. And I took this for granted for the longest time, But not only that, how do we know, the flip side of that, how do we know what we don't have
right
in front of us, whether or not it exists physically or in a digital realm somewhere? So a couple decades ago, I heard about this thing, the Internet Archive, you know. And I use it now and then for very specific things. Now I'm starting to really explore it again and think, wow, you know, what does it mean now?
Mm-hmm.
We were hearing about it in 95 and 96. Y'all familiar with that?
The Internet Archive.
Internet Archive.
Yes.
Oh, good. I would love to know, maybe after we stop around another day, I'd love to know how you use it and how you see it maybe being used in ways that we kind of haven't had time to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's an overwhelming kind of concept to me.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. And very, very visionary, very Hari Seldon, you know, if you were into that, that set of novels. But anyway, we are not a pretty space, I have to say. And tell me, when you walk in, how do you know what to do?
I think I did when I first walked in. I think I walked into the wrong room. I just walked right into, I think, was maybe not supposed to be open for students, or a very densely packed room, and I thought, wait, I think I made a mistake.
Yes, I wonder if that room, if that might have been the music storage room.
I think it might have been.
Yes, yes. And that's one of the things that I think makes us still special, is that, or lucky, maybe that's the word, to have so much of our content on site, because there are many institutions and parts of our own institution that just have to rely on off-site storage, and maybe actually for very good security and climate-controlled reasons and so forth and so forth. The room that you're speaking of actually used to be a classroom back in the 1960s, and it's where, you know, the poetry and the speech and so forth was taught. Also music courses. And it was Cold War era. So you can imagine the standing room only crowds for the course entitled Music Under the Tsars and Soviets.
Oh.
And that was actually one of those very big deal things, which we're not seeing on our course offerings nowadays. The professor's deceased, but I was able to save parts of the syllabus. But you can see also how our concerns might cycle around, but for different reasons, or how we might look at other, at the way we even can collect or even access information of cultural, current cultural, to inform us, not only cultural value. I wanted to just mention, when I said we are not a pretty place, how are we doing for time?
No, we're
all right. We're good. Yeah. All right. So, you know, in my effort to to have fewer, you know, well, what are these ratty things out in the open stacks? All right. The way to think about this is that it may have been used to death, and a lot of our vinyl is in cases that have been used to death. However, vinyl is almost impossible to destroy, and I think it's a great preservation medium.
Mm-hmm. Is what you're holding
It is a score, yeah. And I said, wow, this is kind of fantastic, and it's a piano work, so I thought, whoa. And I went, when was this done, and who did this? This turns out to have been published in Iran in the late 40s or very early 50s, and it was given in person to Boston University's College of Music Library in 1951, and signed off again. Greetings, you know, to College of Music by the composer in 1953. And in fact, he did settle in the greater Boston area mm-hmm. and had an affiliation with the Boston Symphony.
Mm-hmm. What an important
relic. I know. Well, and again, and so what do you do when you have somebody like, oh my goodness, you know, you look, oh, is there an obituary? I hope not mm-hmm. yet, you know. How many copies of this thing might be reported mm-hmm. at all anywhere? Mm-hmm. And so that's the, so it's going to move out of the open stacks and into a slightly more sheltered mm-hmm. location. But again, we need an upgraded description and a little more work done on this. I was talking with one of our doctoral students, actually Tuesday night, and he was on the trail for lesser-known American 20th century and 21st century piano music. And thinking back to the Copland we heard, mm-hmm. I don't, do the brass playing in those kinds of arranged harmonies and very open sound, we were talking about this very piece, and we said, why is it that that piece makes us think of America or something mm-hmm. that's we relate to, even if we don't know why? Mm-hmm. And so then we got on this whole thing. Well, what makes music French? What makes this thing that Copland did American? We were also on the trail for very, very early works of Copland. Mm. When did he? Was he always quote-unquote American, or did he have a moment mm-hmm. where he found his sound, and he's one of those emblematic people of America? Leonard Bernstein is another one mm-hmm. that we all kind of know. Where, then, do we place this very special piece of music and the life of this individual? Mm-hmm. And who did he know here at BU? And Arthur Fiedler, mm-hmm. who that name might ring a bell, taught at BU off and on.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And of course, led the Pops. He was on some kind of early planning committee even for the Mugard Library.
Oh, wow.
We have on the second floor of Mugar, behind glass cases, most of it, Mr. Fiedler's personal collection of scores, which is very wide-ranging in the 20th century. There it is. And it gives me real insights into his very broad interests. And then what he did for the Pops and for the Boston community at large with the free concerts and the themes. He was very, very inclusive in the programming. Mm-hmm. He brought in the jazz soloists, Ella Fitzgerald, you know, mm-hmm. did theme nights and made it fun. And accessible, approachable, available. Mm-hmm. And did you know that the Mugar, David Mugar, after which our library is named, mm-hmm. did you know he's the one responsible for all the fireworks over the 4th of
really?
July, over the Esplanade? Yeah.
I did not know
so
that.
He and I don't know the whole story, but they linked up somehow and they made it happen.
Wow.
And so, again, when the 4th of July happens, mm-hmm. I think, oh my gosh, you know, this is going on in the back of my mind.
Right.
But it's a story worth, I think, telling more fully than I can mm-hmm. now, because I don't have the full story. But there are connections here that mm-hmm. I think are really worth noting.
Right, yeah.
So, yeah.
Oh, that's really interesting to find out. I had no idea.
Yeah, no, I know. Well, and neither did I until I got here. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, you will open up, well, next time mm-hmm. you're handling something physical, see whom it might have been given in memory of mm-hmm. somebody or former owner of, or simply, you know, from College of Arts and Sciences. I mean, there are so many more connections than I realized. Or, for example, to see a little property stamp, Nickerson, like, excuse me, wait a minute, Nickerson, that sounds familiar, right? Mm-hmm. And is this the same Nickerson, name as Nickerson Field or not? I really don't know. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I want to say that our space is for everyone. Mm-hmm. And when you say, you walked in, well, that's kind of what you do. Mm-hmm. And even when our perimeter offices are closed, we leave the doors open to the listening room. Mm-hmm. So you can get in there, play some electric pianos, grab the blue ukulele. We have two ukuleles. Mm-hmm. We also are using our shelving in that room. Now, these photos that I brought over mm-hmm. show kind of a bare red wall. Those are all shelved up now mm-hmm. With open reserves. So it's kind of, share alike. Mm-hmm. And that came about in part because sometimes you have to consult three or four things at once and maybe even listen to something. You have your laptop set up and then maybe a turntable, you're looking at that. And so that was it, basically, so people didn't have to wait in line and request things one at a time mm-hmm. for multiple use. And it's really, so that's one thing happening in that room, that and the instruments. And then we're trying to build up. We changed it out over the summer, but we're rebuilding it. So there are some empty shelves, mm-hmm. and it is, I am coming back. Would you keep this out here for me? Because mm-hmm. when our audio stacks in particular get locked up because they're kind of in office space for the night, if we just know what's going to be wanted, or, we will get it set out if you want it left out to come back. Big score, the Verdi Requiem is out there. Someone just wanted that because they love it. Mm-hmm. That's no other reason than that. Some vinyl left over from one of our summer classes that was a huge hit, taught by Victor Coelho, but the theme was the soundtrack of the civil rights era. Mm-hmm. So you can just imagine. Mm-hmm. And we were so happy we were able to find some vinyl to set out to just kind of complement the other.
Yeah, information. It seems like you have vinyl for every occasion.
We do, and things on the UNESCO mm-hmm. label, the Smithsonian, and yet it's in the grand scheme of things, it sometimes seems like it's, well, what's enough, or what mm-hmm. is different enough? What is really reaching in all kinds of across all kinds of eras and genres and styles and so
forth. I think especially in this day and age with so many resources available to you and so many ways to look for things, mm-hmm. it's kind of even harder to answer that question.
It really is. And to that, I would say to anybody, it's like, well, gosh, if you had a chance, what would be a great idea? Mm-hmm. What would be good? If things are going to be happening differently or space used differently, any of that, clutter aside, what's going to make you say, ah? And one of the things that I've been struggling with is, can we digitize on the spot for something that is fit to purpose, mm-hmm. whatever the purpose is, an image or some sound, or some video and something like that. And will that even be an issue 5 or 10 years from now? I don't know. So we've been able, we do what we can. We can't always, what do we need to do preemptively? And I think that's really the big question. Mm-hmm. And so I'm kind of conservative in my thinking. I don't want to throw anything away,
right.
And I'm like, oh well, it's our third copy. Do we think about? Mm-hmm. But again, what is the use? What was its value? What is its value? What could be its value? And
I had a question about your back to the digitization.
Yes,
wanted to know if you had a system and what's on that system.
Yes.
And if it's open to students to use.
Yes, it is. And teaching fellows and faculty, if they wish. What we can do is digitize from vinyl at any speed, you know, 78, 48, 35, cassette and CD. Our open reel machines are not reliable. And to be honest, if we had something on open reel tape, I would rather, at this point, get it sent out to some specialists. Yeah. But, and again, and this kind of has to be a bit of a self-regulating thing. I mean, can't digitize just anything at random and throw it out on the open web. I mean, that we want to have the use for it under control. But let's say you're doing a mock-up now for an ad campaign, mm-hmm. right? And you need some sound effects or something. It could happen in our space. It could. We use Audacity. We used to use SoundForge. And that, I don't know if SoundForge exists anymore, but we were using SoundForge because it's what the engineers at the School of Music were using at the time. And I sometimes needed a tip from them, like what, how to wrap things up. But I mean, but think of the pedagogical cases as well, to have three different versions of the same thing, 30-second clips side by side. Mm-hmm. The use of our collection for languages, especially in a performance setting, plays, poets reading their own, or theater, so forth, vocal music, ethnic music, is a good complement to the kinds of services that the Geddes provides. Mm-hmm. Now, there's another group with some good expertise over right. there too.
Do you collaborate with them at all, or?
Oh, now and then, mostly to consult, like mm-hmm. like yeah. what our options are, and mm-hmm. can they help? You know, how are they doing with open reel mm-hmm. Tape? I don't think anyone's really daring to work with that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I know.
Oh my gosh! Time is
sadly
yeah.
running out.
But what? But. Yeah. But I want to just say, you know, we are on the mm-hmm. Charles Riverside mm-hmm. of the Mugar Library.
Yes.
Staff are available until 6-7 days a week. Best days to come by would be, I would say, weekdays if we have some. Well, no, I wouldn't say the best days. It depends on what you have in mind.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, thank you. Thank you
well,
so much.
Well, you're
totally
welcome. I will say also an all-purpose contact mm-hmm. would be ask@bu.edu. That okay. gets you into the library.
Just move question, in general?
To across the yeah. libraries.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Then the monitor of that account will shoot questions off in whatever directions mm-hmm. are needed.
Okay.
So you have the essential things, the inauguration address and ask@bu.edu.
Exactly. Which will definitely be utilized for... Yeah, no, I've loved the music library. I love the space.
And that's lovely. And I'm quite serious. It's like, wow, you're here someday and you say, whoa, you know what would be neat? You know what could happen here?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That'd be awesome, yeah.
Yeah.
We have some lovely pictures and scores that will be posted on our Instagram page.
Yes.
So please make sure to check those out.
Definitely.
They're very awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, and I just thank you so much again for coming
oh,
onto the show
totally
and
well.
Sharing more about the music library. I think it's definitely a resource that needs to be more known across campus. And
thank you. I will say we're not the only one,
right? Oh,
as we know, as oh, we yeah. spoke about earlier. But I so appreciate. Yeah, it's a good week here, and it's just mm-hmm. fun to be over here.
Yeah,
during this
definitely.
Week.
I'm probably right. going to make an effort to come out to the inauguration and
yes, oh do definitely. Oh do I mean it's
I didn't realize how so much
it's,
is going
it
on
is for
it.
And this is for everyone I mean mm-hmm. it's and graduation is a big deal I mm-hmm. will tell you that mm-hmm. But this I mean it's just a very very special event
mm-hmm. All right,
thank you so much.
Yeah, welcome.
Thank you.
All right, and we'll head back into some music and we will pick up next week, next Tuesday.
Yeah. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Thank you for tuning
Thank
in.
Thank you.